is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The majority of voters go to the polls knowing who they want to vote for at the top of the ticket, for Congress, for governor, for senator. But what about all those down-ticket races, especially candidates running for judicial seats? Often names are unfamiliar, and in the case of judges, what criteria should you even use to choose between candidates? What makes a good judge? Some years, a lot of judges run unopposed, but this year in Hamilton County, we have a host of contested races. To try to shine a light on these important choices, we are joined today by the president of the Cincinnati Bar Association, Kelly Myers. She is also the managing partner of Freaking Myers and Rule. Past president of the Cincinnati Bar Association, John J. Williams, and the co-president of the League of Women Voters, Elizabeth Brown. To join our discussion, you can call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everybody, to Cincinnati Edition. And we do have a lot of contested races this year that are statewide in some cases, but Hamilton County focused in others. So there's a lot of things here. So I don't know. Kelly, let's get started by just helping people make this distinction. There's all these different kinds of courts, and you know, there's Supreme Court, there's district court races this year, district appeals court races, and there's common pleas courts. What's the difference between, since that's what we're dealing with this year, those sorts of situations?
Well, the common pleas court of Hamilton County would be the court where basically you would start with a complaint. If you were engaged in a lawsuit or if you were in a criminal trial, those are the trial courts. So those are the trial judges. And then,
sort of what people are used to seeing,
right?
On
that's where
television dramas.
People go into court. Witnesses provide testimony.
Right.
Judges render decisions. And then, if there is an issue arising out of the common pleas decision or verdict or ruling, then there's an opportunity to appeal to the Court of Appeals. And then, if there's still an issue that's in contest or one party is not satisfied with the decision, they would have the opportunity to ask the Supreme Court, and in this case, the Ohio State Supreme Court, to listen to the decision and render a verdict.
But Ohio Supreme Court doesn't have to take every case that is appealed to it. It can select which ones it wants to take.
Correct. And only a small percentage of cases that attorneys ask the Supreme Court to hear will be heard.
So the vast majority of cases are going to end at that district appeals court, the first district appeals.
In Hamilton
in
County,
Hamilton
it's the
County.
First district, yes. And the vast majority of cases will be finalized there.
Okay. John, is there some basic standards of who can run for judge? So, for example, for the House of Representatives, you have to be 25 years old. If you run for the Senate, you have to be 30 years old, all those kinds of – is there just some baseline for who can run and be a judge?
Well, the only baseline for who can run and be a judge is you have to have been in years a certain number – have to have practiced a certain number of years.
So you have to be a lawyer.
Have to be a lawyer. And you have to practice 6 years, I believe. And after that – anybody who gets enough names to go on the ballot is qualified to run for judge.
And there is a thing, sort of a code of conduct for judges and judicial candidates. And to what extent does that limit what people can say, campaign on, you know, do during a campaign to say, vote for me and, you know, this is the reason why?
Well, a person running for judge is not supposed to reveal how they would rule on a particular case that comes in front of them. And that's really the parameters of the code.
So we've seen something with – I mean, this is at a different level, but with the hearings in the U.S. Senate around Kavanaugh's appointment, been a lot of questions where he has said, well, I don't want to make a comment because that would reveal how I might rule in a particular kind of case, and it would depend on the merits and the specifics of the case. So judicial candidates aren't supposed to tip their hands about how they're going to to do that, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Elizabeth, League of Women Voters, the Bar Association, Urban League, a number of groups are going to be sponsoring a forum on October the 8th. In that forum, what do you expect to be able to ask judicial candidates, and what do you expect they might be able to comment on?
I think there's a lot of things that they can comment on. There are some things they can't. But the forum that we did jointly last year was one of the best candidate forums I've been to, and it may be because the judges aren't used to having talking points where they're just saying the same thing over and over. And they actually got into great discussion, policy discussions on things like bail reform, cash bail, whether that's equity in that.
Which is becoming an increasing issue with California's decision. And yeah, this is okay.
Right. So those type of policy issues. And as a voter, I had no trouble listening to them and making some personal judgments on who I wanted to vote for based on, you know, where they were coming from on some of those issues.
So, for example, something that's going to be on the ballot this fall is issue one in the state, which is about reform of sentencing structures on for drug offenses and also for people who are currently in prison. Do you think judicial candidates would be willing, since that's on the same ballot they're on, to comment about something like that? That's policy. But would they be willing to comment?
It's my understanding that because it's currently on the ballot that they're not supposed to.
Okay.
If it was theoretical, they could. But the fact that it's currently a ballot issue, I think they're not supposed to.
And that's what I'm trying to clarify here. There are real limits that these candidates are running under that they need to, that we as voters need to recognize. They're not just trying to avoid us. They're not supposed to do that.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Right. And in Ohio, our judges are elected, and not every state does elect judges. And sometimes it puts the judges at a difficult position, the candidates for judicial office, in difficult positions because they're constrained by various canons and can't really sometimes be as forthcoming as the voters would like to hear from.
Now, when you go in to vote for judges, they're not identified on the ballot as Republican or Democratic.
Correct.
Correct.
But what's the role of political parties in terms of these kinds of judicial races? It would appear, if you just looked at the ballot, there was no role. John, what's the role of political parties here?
I don't think that you can – it's hard to get to the bench without the backing of a political party, whether Republican or Democratic. And the role is so crucial because, unfortunately, many of our judges are appointed, which means during an off-election year, there was an opening, and whoever is running the statehouse got to appoint a person to be a judge. And that's politically motivated and affiliated. There's no way around that. So you need to have the party behind you in order to be successful. That's bottom line.
Even though you're on the ballot, you won't be identified as a Republican or a Democrat. Can you, in your literature, identify yourself as a Democrat or a Republican?
Absolutely, and they do all the time.
They're identified as endorsed by.
Yeah. Right. Endorsed by. So that'd be the way that they would get around. I also want to point out from years of working in this area that maybe one of the most powerful tools, because so many people do go to the polls without knowing who they're going to vote for in the judges, is the people who stand out front and pass out those sample ballots. And people know who they wanted to vote for at the top of the ticket. And they said, oh, I voted for this person, this person, this person. Now, I don't know these person down the ticket. I don't know who these are, but they're on the same ticket as I just voted at the top. I'll vote for these. So that, you know, sometimes we think, why do they spend their time standing out in the rain, passing out those sample ballots? But down ticket races, those can be absolutely critical. And those are run by the political parties. Those are party ballots. So,
yeah, I think that there are a lot of ways that voters can get information, and some of them just will vote the party line. But a lot of other people, I mean, the face-to-face forum that we're doing is really important. The league puts out their voter guide that we distribute throughout the county and is available online, where you can hear the candidates' actual words mm-hmm. and have some judgment on what it is they're considering. And I think it's a problem when you're, what John was talking about, the appointments, then you become a familiar name. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a good judge. It may mean you've been there a long time. It may mean, as one of my attorney friends that practices in trial courts a lot said, that there are a lot of judges there that are just plain ill-tempered and burnt out. And so maybe there, it's important that voters really look up who it is that they're voting for.
I might also point out there is a website this year called judicialvotescount.org. And on that, there's a lot of information about individual candidates, and there's also a lot of information just about the court system. Kelly, what about the Bar Association doing evaluations? My understanding is that you are doing evaluations again. Is that true?
We are. This year, the Cincinnati Bar Association, one of the planks of our mission is to educate the public. And the public needs to, I think it's very valuable for to have some information about the judicial candidates that they're asked to go to the poll and vote on in November. So lawyers know a good deal about the judges that they practice in front of, more than perhaps the public would know, because ideally they're not in front of the judges, at least not as much as the lawyers are. So the Cincinnati Bar Association has created a judicial evaluation. We have sent that out to the members of the Cincinnati Bar Association and asked our members to provide feedback on the judicial candidates for only those persons that they have had experience with, been before, have personal knowledge of in the past 4 years. And we've asked them to provide evaluations on topics such as administrative diligence, communication skills, community engagement, the candidate's integrity, impartiality, objectivity, their legal experience, and their professional temperament. And then the Bar Association is going to tabulate the results of the survey and publish those. We hope to have that published on or about October 3rd, so early October. And if you're looking for those results, you can find them on www.cincybar.org, and it's CincyBar.org.
John, those evaluations sort of went away for a while. It used to be, for those of us in the press who tried to cover these sorts of races, it was sort of a go-to thing. What did the Cincinnati Bar Association have to say? And then you decided not to do it for a while. What brought it back?
Well, I mean, I thought that during my term as president, I thought it was important for us to take this role because it really is what the Bar Association should be doing, as Kelly said. I mean, we're in the best position to help folks understand whether or not people seeking to be judges are qualified and what their level of qualification is or is not. So this tool hopefully will give some guidance to the general public, especially at these levels. You've got common pleas and you've got court of appeals. Most average folks know what muni court is because they call it people's court. So you can actually talk to some of your neighbors because there's a good chance that for some reason they may have been there for a small claims dispute or a minor traffic violation. So you know those judges. You're more familiar with them. And those judges run in these smaller districts too. So this is a little different. There's a chance that you've never been to common pleas and you've definitely probably never been to court of appeals. So we're in a better position to help folks understand that, give them these types of tools. And so is the League of Women Voters. We're just trying to give you as much information as possible because since this is not supposed to be a political process, this has to be a people process. And this is where the bar fits into it.
Okay. Elizabeth, I want to point out you're a lawyer too. Or I don't know that you're practicing, but you are a lawyer by training.
Right.
Okay. So this is a personal commitment of yours as well. I mean, it's not just a theoretical sort of
justice
thing.
Justice is a personal commitment.
Justice is a personal commitment of yours, yes. So let's just talk about a few things. In general, I'm not going to bring up individual names of races, but let me just on the Ohio Supreme Court, which in some ways may seem farther away than anything else. I might point out, though, that currently there are two local people on the Ohio Supreme Court, Pat Fisher and Pat Fisher and Pat DeWine, and two Pats.
Yep.
And so that may seem a little bit more familiar than normal. But if you look at the lineup on the Ohio Supreme Court, it's all Republicans. The one Democrat resigned in order to run for governor and then failed. And it was replaced by the governor, as John was talking about before, by a Republican. To what extent is it legitimate to ask a question about, I'd like a variety of backgrounds, philosophies, maybe reflected through party affiliation on a court like that?
If you'd like, Dan, I think there is a reason that they keep those elections nonpartisan. And you've talked a couple times about parties. You know, in other elections, that may be where the major issue is. I think in the judicial elections, it's much less important. I think there are issues that have to do with the types of questions that Kelly mentioned on the polls, things like judicial temperament. I think a fair number of people who have been to Common Pleas Court have a sense of whether a judge is fair and treats people with respect. Even people who get sent to jail, they will say, yes, it was fair, I did it, and I got sent to jail. Or they may feel it was totally unfair and he was disrespectful. And I think those types of issues become much more important in these races than what your political philosophy are. I think a lot of the public, I trust the public if they would pay attention to these races to make good decisions. And I think it's important to look at the advantages of electing judges.
Okay.
I mean, I felt strongly after the Tenzing trial when people were just furious and the system's wrong and we've got to tear down the system, it's not justice, to be able to tell people, the judges are elected. You know, if you think that judge was unfair, then you need to look to the election. And to turn people to that process, it gives validity to the entire system.
What about other questions of diversity? Well, we have quite a few women running this year. Is the fact of, do you take into account, do you weigh in? Is it fair for the voter to take a look at, not party, you're saying that's not the essential issue. Women, men, they have different approaches to life. Is that worth taking into account?
I think so. I mean, people have to – this county, especially – this county is becoming more and more diverse. And I think the county judiciary has to reflect that. And the fact that we do have a much larger number of female candidates than we've ever had before, I think it says a lot about the way – and where the county's moving to. We're trying to be more inclusive. Also, I think that the fact that we have this many contested races, I've been practicing for 30 years, never seen this many contested races. Usually they're uncontested.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think that people are getting better educated about how the bench can affect their life. And this is important.
So how important are judges to people's lives? Now, it's one thing if you got the traffic ticket and you're going to go to municipal court. You kind of know that. But how important are these judges and the choices that we make? How much do they impact the way you and I live on a everyday basic basis?
Well, our judicial system is critically important to our governance. And the judges can have a significant impact on an individual's life. And when you get up into the Ohio Supreme Court, they are deciding cases that affect broad public policies of the state. So they're very, very important. And I think it's, I am very heartened by the fact that people are paying attention. A robust civic dialogue about our government is only a good thing. And I think the more people who can learn about the races, educate themselves and vote is great. And I think our goal is just to give them a little information to help make that decision easier for them so they can be an informed voter.
I think there's a lot of people that are impacted by what goes on in the courts too, much more than we realize. I don't know the numbers, but if you consider the individuals, their families, their communities, there's a lot of people, eviction court. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number of folks that are just, put through eviction court annually is huge. So there's a big impact. A lot of people are in and out of those doors and have a sense of what's going on, and it really does impact us.
Yeah, I'd like to point out with the first District Court of Appeals here in Hamilton County, those judges, when they make a decision, can write a fairly extensive opinion, which then becomes, and we've heard a lot about this again in the Kavanaugh hearings, about once a court makes a decision, a judge has spoken about the reasons for that, other judges then will go and read that. So when we're talking about the Ohio Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, these are judges who have a chance to impact not just that case, but policy on an ongoing basis. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
Absolutely. If the Ohio Supreme Court renders a decision, every other court in the state of Ohio has to follow that precedent or follow that law.
Well, also, I think, Dan, if you look at it that way, and people have to understand how significant it is to have both Pat DeWine and Pat Fisher on the Supreme Court, that represents about 23% of the court. And they're coming from Hamilton County. And the only reason they're there is because they came through our Court of Appeals, and the voters put them there. See, the voters have that much impact on what can happen, because most of the judges, they don't just walk into being judges. They start at some level. And this is our opportunity to make sure the folks who are going into the system, who are starting out, some of them, that it is the best qualified person. And that's what I think both of our organizations strive to do.
One of the things there is, and this has been brought up a bit, about the value of experience, that you start someplace and then you work your way up and people keep selecting you. And what do you think, though, how does it affect you when you've got somebody who's been a judge for a long period of time, probably fairly well known name-wise, and then there's somebody brand new running against that person? Who doesn't have any, starts out with not a lot of name recognition. And can you imagine that there are times when you would want to select the new person, even though the experienced person is still there? What's the role of experience here for you? How do you weigh that?
I think as a voter, experience may count, but to me, that's more like the name recognition. That's a rather minor part of what it is. There's always a transition in any new job. And so when I look at the candidates' words and what they've done to answer questions or hear them face-to-face at a forum, the experience is not necessarily the important thing that I'm looking for. So,
yeah. Also, I think you have to assess what is the experience. At the end of the day, there may be some judges who've been on the bench forever, and the experience that the average voter has with that person is not necessarily good experience just because they're there. There are some folks who've never been a judge, but they have enough administrative diligence and communication skills and community education, and they exhibit this objectivity and experience and professional temperament as what our survey is calling for, that they're just as qualified as the next person.
Okay. So I want to do several things right here at the end. We're out of time. But there is this open session on October the 8th at the Urban League where judicial candidates will have a chance to speak. People will have a chance to meet them, sponsored by both of your organizations and other organizations, that the Cincinnati Bar Association will be publishing its evaluation probably come out about October the 3rd, you were saying. That's before early voting starts. And third, there is this judicialvotescount.org. And all of those tools are out there. I encourage people to use them. And very much thank you for being here and all the work you're doing to turn this into this process into a thoughtful and educational process. So anyway, with that, I want to thank Kelly Myers, John Williams, and Elizabeth Brown.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7. WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.